Welcome to the Luminary Podcast. I'm your host, Annie Perry. I'm a professional psychic channel, a spirituality and energetics teacher. One of my sole missions is to activate and illuminate light leaders across the globe. Let's go. Hi, beautiful souls. Welcome back to the Luminary Podcast. I'm your host, Annie Perry, super psychic channel, psychic, cosmic, astronaut now, all kinds of things. Man, I've had the weirdest week ever. Normally when I come onto the podcast, I'm like, I've had the most amazing week. I've had the craziest out there experiences. Not this week. This week, I just had straight up weirdness. It was like one weird thing after another weird thing. And I definitely feel like I am in some sort of portal to change. But it's almost like the more you get out there in the universe, the more like weird things get. And then you realize that the weirdness is just another aspect of the creator. Because all of the aspects of ourselves, the weirdness, the nerdiness, the sarcasm, the sense of humor, the desire to just lay down and sleep for the next 12 hours, or the desire to like go run around outside under the moon or under the sun, all of those are just the different aspects of the creator. And so every facet of yourself is another aspect of the creator. And when you start to really get out there in the cosmos, you start to realize, yeah, it wasn't just me. It was other beings are now reflecting this aspect back to me. And the aspect that I was faced with this week was just weirdness. It was just general bizarre. So I am on, I think, day 10 of a self-imposed meditation retreat. I've been talking a little bit about this on social media. I decided that I wanted to do some Dr. Joe Dispenza meditations. They're quite long. They are much longer, and I really want to prepare myself to go to one of his retreats where they meditate for like 6 to 8 hours a day. They'll have a single meditation that's like 4 hours long. And so I, even though I'm a very practiced meditator and I meditate every day, multiple times a day, and I kind of even just work in a meditative state, that's a long time. That's a long time to stay focused on the meditation, especially when you're in a room with other people. So I was like, I know I want to go to a retreat, hopefully maybe this summer. And I know that I've really got to, like, you know, increase the amount of time that I can meditate, because the meditations that he does now as retreats, they're all advanced. And so everyone there is used to meditating for hours and hours. So it's like, all right, I got to, you know, build up my muscles for this. And so I started this self-imposed meditation retreat where I'm doing, you know, an hour in the morning, and then I was doing like 30 minutes at night, and that turned into an hour. And now I'm somewhere around like 3, maybe 4 hours a day. And I have to tell you, it is such a huge catalyst for growth. I mean, massive. I originally intended to only be meditating for 3 days like this. I was like, I'm just going to do it for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the change in me was so great after those 3 days, the level of clarity, the level of direction about my life and my soul missions and aspects of myself that I could not see clearly, the hidden shadow aspects of myself that I could not see clearly were being brought forward in the meditations so clear without needing to, you know, go through and experience a trigger. They were just naturally coming to me in meditations to be seen, to be witnessed, to be released, or to be embraced, you know, whatever was the emotion that part of myself needed. And so I kept going, and now I'm on day 10, and I think I'm just going to keep going for as long as I feel called to do it. Which sounds safe, right? sounds like a safe term, right? I don't want to say that I'm going to do it for like 30 days and then on the 28th day I feel called to stop doing it. I really have developed such a deeper level of intuition through this process. And it's even given me a greater ability to witness where and when I am not listening to my intuition. It's now so obvious. In fact, me and my higher self had a whole struggle today because I didn't want to listen to them. I did not want to do what they were guiding me to do. And we went through this whole struggle and we talked about it and it was very transparent. And, you know, I am so grateful to have such a clear, open channel and be able to have these conversations as if I was talking to another, you know, person, even though these are just different aspects of myself, different, I don't want to say versions of myself, but definitely different layers of self. And that is your higher self as well. And all of your higher levels and all of your future selves. And right around, I want to say it was day 7, I started to hit very deep levels of resistance. And that's when things started to get very weird in my life. That's when weird things started popping up. And it was almost as if I was being asked to face the judgment I have about some things in this world that I'm like, that's really weird. Or things in the universe that I'm like, why are you doing that? That is so strange. And so even though when we say weird and strange, it doesn't sound that judgmental. It sounds like we're mostly saying like, that's not what I'm used to. And yet I definitely feel like I'm being asked to kind of work through that, work through the way that I perceive things to be strange or weird or different. Which is funny because, like, I'm already a psychic. I already think of myself as weird, as different. It's like I can't just go up to people and tell them I'm a psychic. I don't run up to people and tell them that the way that I might have told them, you know, oh, I work at Nordstrom. Now I wait for people to ask me what I do. That's how I know that spirit is guiding me to tell them what it is that I do. And afterwards, you know, people have the strangest reactions. Some of them are very interested and think it's so cool and the coolest thing ever. And some people literally just like run away from you. I don't know if they think I'm gonna like try to jump inside their mind or something. But the few things I wanted to say about this experience I'm having in meditation is one of my first realizations was that you have to meditate longer. You have to meditate longer. If you're only meditating 5, 10, 15 minutes, and I know that's what everyone says to kind of appease the hyper productive versions of ourselves that we have co-created with this world, and the need to always be doing, 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 and the constant excuses about why we don't have time to do something. And I saw my own role in that with my clients of telling them, well, if you can only do 5 minutes a day, then do 5 minutes a day. And us mirroring and affirming to each other why they don't have time or more time to meditate and to really go deep within themselves. And it's always like, oh, you're a mom. Oh, you're busy. Oh, you have a job. Oh, you have a business. You know, you're so busy. If you only have 5 minutes, then that's fine. When really I should have been saying, you need to really look deeper and really take more time to do this if you want to become the person that you are meant to be, that your soul is desiring to embody. You need to go deeper. You need to cut the bullshit, cut the excuses, and you need to make the time to sit your ass down and meditate for a much longer time. Like if you want to get to know who you are and you want to go to your next level and you want to really step into deeper embodiment and you want to get out of feeling stuck, get out of all of the old feelings, you know, the depression, the anxiety, and I have dealt with all of those firsthand, and you want to get out of the lack of clarity about why you're here and what you're doing in this life, you need to sit your ass down and meditate for a lot longer. You need to go there for at least an hour or more. You need to confront the ego that is telling you we don't have time for this because the ego wants you to stay the same. So you've got to go confront that little troll inside of yourself, and you've got to work through that. Because once I started to get through the discomfort and the thoughts of, I have other things to do, I'm so busy, la 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 la, what if someone is emailing me or messaging me or needs me for something? Once I got through that, that's when all of the magical, mystical things started happening, and I started to have so much clarity about why I'm here, what my next steps are, a deeper level of embodiment. My own guides have shown me this incredible way to embody any aspect of the creator in yourself. And I never would have known that if I had not gotten through the discomfort of, you know, I don't want to meditate for an hour. You know, get your ass through that. Like, if you want to come out the other side, if you want to fucking ascend, if you want to like have your third eye open, if you want to like do all of the mystical stuff and you want your 3D reality to start literally shifting like tectonic plates underneath you in the direction of where you have been trying to go, the answer is not outside of you. The answer is not at your job. It's not in your relationship. It's not in your spiritual teacher. It is inside of you in a deeper level that you have not been willing to reach into and to unlock in yourself. And that was one of my other takeaways, which was, you are all of the keys and the codes. They're all inside of you and they are waiting for your awareness. You can only be truly activated, truly unlocked by another being, if you are already standing at the door of that unlocking, of that clear knowing, of that remembrance. If you're already standing at the door and you're saying, I want to open this door, that's the only way that you truly receive an activation from another being. And the third thing that I have learned through this process is, even though I am a spiritual teacher, I am a podcaster, I am a psychic channel, I am all of those things, and I do all of those things every single day, there are still deeper levels of resistance inside of me. And I bet there's deeper levels of resistance inside of you too. Deeper levels of resistance to become like God, to become God, to embody all of the creator, to embody all of your power, to embody all of your truth, to be a fucking alien on earth during this time, to have parts of yourself in the 5D and parts of yourself in the 3D, to be a fucking struggle bus. Like, maybe you're a perfectionist like me and you don't like to be the struggle bus. There's a resistance inside of you that says, I do not want to be the one struggling, and that's why I'm doing all of this work. So then it's like you reach this full circle moment, and yourself is guiding you to address that while you are in the deep work. Like, can you become your own contradiction? Can you become your own contradiction? That will kind of like, you know, befuddle the mind for quite a few days. That was definitely my experience, was, wow, these deeper levels of resistance are there. And a lot of it is because I don't want to become a contradiction, and that the entire universe, I already know logically and I already know conceptually, is a contradiction. It is a contradiction. That's what duality is. It's a contradiction. And it's kind of the universe's joke about itself. It's like, yeah, I'm infinite and you can't figure me out. And yet also, like, you're going to die, and this whole thing, this whole party of your life is going to end. And you're just sitting there like trying to hold both of those truths that are contradicting themselves. Like, if I'm the creator and I'm infinite, but I'm also going to die, and I also don't actually have infinite amount of time to be Annie Perry, there's a resistance. There's a resistance. But when you start to move through those deeper levels of resistance with a wide open heart, that's the magic. That's the magic, is you start to see the pieces of duality melt into each other, come together, and become one. And you're almost shocked. I thought those were two separate things. I thought those were two different things. And this was one of the divine downloads I received in a meditation, and it was the concept of divine masculine and divine feminine is the first illusion of separation. For these are, in fact, the same things. That made my mind melt. That made my mind literally melt, because in a dualistic reality, we want to think that light or dark existed first, that one of them had to exist first. And what the creator, the truest essence of my being, was telling me was that was the first illusion of separation. They're the same thing. They were never separate, and they are never separate. They exist because the other exists. Therefore, they are intrinsically and forever intertwined. One of the other divine downloads that I received was all of your creations, everything that you want to create, experience, manifest, receive, everything you want to do in this whole lifetime is actually at this very moment inside of you. It was never a question of where is it? It's inside of you. It was always the question of if you would allow it to come out. If you would allow it to come forward and be created and be experienced and be made manifest. And at that moment of receiving that download from my God self, I felt this huge activation of energy through my whole body, as if everything that I would ever create was, in fact, inside of me, you know, humming and buzzing with life and with energy and wanting to come out. And it was really a matter of the resistance to actually allowing all of those creations and all of those experiences. But we can't find the resistance if we aren't willing to go inwards and to look for it. And my third divine download that I want to share with you today is the universe is an internal game. There is nothing outside of you. Nothing. And they meant it literally. They were like, there is literally nothing outside of you. The universe is an internal game. And I was only shown that truth when I had been in there for like 8 or 9 days at that point, receiving and working through the resistance and receiving and allowing myself to lean into it. And yet even still, I can feel there's deeper levels of resistance. There's deeper places that I can go. So I share that to really encourage you, no matter where you're at in life, even if you're very, very satisfied with your life, even if you are deeply unsatisfied and you feel like you can't do it, to just fucking try. To just fucking try. To just try to go in there and to find a good guided meditation that's, you know, at least an hour long, and just see what you find in there. So before we jump into your cosmic lover and your cosmic lover archetypes, which I'm so excited for, and I spent a really fun amount of time hanging out with the different ascended masters that these are all modeled after, the quick announcements I have for you this week is, number one, we have the Higher Light Gathering. If you want to go full galactic, full alien, if you want a full metal upgrade, if you want a full energetic upgrade, definitely come to the Higher Light Gathering. That is going to be on Sunday, April 23rd. If you've never been to one of my like psychic channeling energy experiences, you definitely need to. You definitely need to. They're just so cool, and they're just such a fun experience, and you get such an incredible energetic upgrade. You get some alignment, and Higher Light is basically going to start rewiring your energy in there, and it will come through to the degree with which you allow it to come through. And number two, we have Masterpiece. I moved the dates of Masterpiece around because I was going through my own initiation, but if you are ready for a divine initiation to your highest creator self, definitely check out Masterpiece through the link below. It's going to be 6 weeks. We get to hang out for 6 weeks. We get to meet up every week. We get to be on Voxer all week long. It is going to be such a deep, intimate, soul-based experience for women who are ready to go there. Like, if you are ready to embody a higher level of being, a more centered and grounded truth, and it really truly is all about the embodiment. That's what it is. Embodiment is not just knowing something with your mind. You can know all of these different facts about the universe, and nothing in your life will change until you allow the embodiment, which is to allow the energy to be made manifest through you. And that's exactly what I'm going to teach you how to do in Masterpiece, a sacred memory journey, because it's all a memory journey. This whole lifetime, everything you're experiencing, everything you experience on any of my podcast episodes, this is a memory journey. This is a memory community. This is literally about remembering who you are. This is an awakening. That's just waking up to the truth of who you've always been. So if you're ready to go on that journey, check out Masterpiece through the link below. All right, let's jump in. What are the cosmic lover archetypes? And how do we know what ours is? The way that I approach any archetypes, and I have another shorter episode coming out on archetypes as well, and what they have to do with your soul mission, but the way that I approach them is that they are tools for my benefit. They are not a cage for me to put myself in. They are not rules and restrictions. They shouldn't feel negative. They shouldn't feel like a fucking bummer. They should feel more empowering because they are tools and they are energies for you to lean into in order to activate and access more of your truth, alignment, and personal power. So I first heard about these archetypes through Lady Isis, who is one of the Ascended Masters that I work with, and she came through a session with a client who was asking about her dating life, you know, about romantic partners. And Lady Isis started to go into this beautiful description of the different archetypical men that were available for this particular client and that were already in her energy field, right? Which means that at any moment they could meet randomly at the grocery store or online or wherever people meet other people. So she was basically telling her they're in your vortex, they're in your field, but it's a matter of you deciding which archetype you desire to embody, who you really are, and who your opposite energy is that complements you the best way. And so for that client, she got great, beautiful guidance about what archetype she was and what her perfectly balanced opposite was that would lead her to a deep, fulfilling union with any man or woman who embodies the archetype of the opposite, the complementary archetype. And even if you are non-binary and you choose to identify as non-binary, you can still embody one of these archetypes and these essences as your essence, as a being. It doesn't have anything to do with gender, even though we're going to talk about divine feminine beings, we're going to talk about divine masculine beings. It doesn't have anything to do with your physical gender or your sexual orientation. So I always like to be very clear when talking about these energies. We're going a level higher than the 3D. We're going into the 5D, and we're talking about what your beautiful complementary energy is in your cosmic lover. So the one who's going to really balance you out, who's going to light your soul on fire, who is going to help you fulfill your soul missions, who is going to feel right. And I don't know about you, but in my romantic relationships, I've been in quite a few that did not feel right for me at all. And once I understood these different archetypes and which one I was, and was, you know, honest about which one I was, and didn't try to shapeshift into the one that I thought this, you know, whatever man I was dating, I didn't try to shapeshift into the one that I thought he might like. And I started to see in all of my exes and all of the men that I've dated, I started to see their archetypes. And I was like, oh, they were that. And that's why we didn't align. They were that. And that's why we didn't align. But I tried to, several times, tried to shapeshift myself into one of the other divine feminine archetypes. And sometimes I would even become one of the divine masculine archetypes in order to create some polarity. If I was dating someone who had more of the feminine essence in them. So it was really interesting for me. And that's why I thought that I wanted to share them with you and some of their traits, some of their personality traits. And what's very interesting is that as I was channeling this from all of these different ascended masters and the archetype and energy that they embody, is that they also told me that this is the way that I communicate with my divine opposite, with my divine cosmic lover, with my divine complement. And that's really the word that they would use, is my complement. If you're an artist, you know what complementary colors are. And it doesn't have anything to do with giving someone a compliment. It's a different spelling of this word that sounds the same. If you know what complementary colors are, then that's exactly what I'm talking about. They're two colors that are totally different. And yet, when you look at them, they start to blend together and create the most beautiful image. The other thing that I learned while doing this channeling and making the notes for this podcast was that the divine feminine is actually not called the feminine energy. It's actually called the feminine mystery. The divine feminine mystery that exists in all of us, and the masculine, which normally we would say, oh, the divine masculine energy, is actually called the great masculine knowledge. So we have the great feminine mystery and the great masculine knowledge. And these are all ancient Egyptian couplings, or what they would call consorts, their divine consort. So you're going to recognize these names, and I chose to just use the ancient Egyptian ones for the sake of clarity, but you can find these divine archetypes in, you know, Greco-Roman history, you can find it in the Nordic histories, the Vedic traditions, the Asian and the Southeast Asian traditions, Oceania, you can find them everywhere. But I chose to just use the ancient Egyptian ones. So the first divine union that we have is Bastet and Anubis. Bastet, as the great feminine mystery, she embodies the cat. She is probably the top embodiment of mystery itself, as in she is mysterious, right? We all know that cats are very playful, they're very sly, and so she has that kind of energy about her, that she is mysterious, she is playful, she enjoys her youthfulness no matter what age that she might be. She is always seeking, she enjoys pleasure, she wants to be seen, and she wants to be pursued by the masculine knowledge. And I kind of imagine a person who has this archetype in this day and age, who is someone that they are approachable and yet they're kind of mysterious at the same time, as in you can feel them inviting you in to their energy, to their aura, in order for you to ask them the questions about who they are, in order for you to dig deeper and find out more about them. It's kind of that energy of seeking and wanting to be sought out, and seeing, but also wanting to be seen, wanting to be pursued, And having that playfulness and that sense of wonder, as if when you enter into this person's aura and their energy and you start getting to know them, you start realizing that they're very magical, that they have a lot of wonder and playfulness about them. Even if you weren't too sure based on how they looked on the outside, you could feel them inviting you in to understand their mystery and their playfulness. And their divine complement is Anubis, who is the dog, right? Anubis is the dog-headed ancient Egyptian god, but also the Syrians who created all canine creatures, and they are the dearest friend and the dearest companion of Earth. And so it's no surprise that so many of us love our dogs and we love canines and they're our best friends, because that really is the energy of Anubis, right? The dog is seeking out, and the cat is kind of, you know, always around the next corner, and they're always a little too fast for the dog, but the dog will never stop seeking them out, right? That's their nature, is that they are going to seek out that feminine mystery. They want to seek it out. They want to bring it into their own light as that masculine knowledge. The masculine is the light that shines into the feminine mystery. So I envision someone who embodies the Anubis energy and archetype as someone who is more straightforward, youthful, loves to be more in their youth, and no matter what age, they just enjoy the playfulness of youth, the enjoyment of it, the kind of like carefree, lighthearted, and that's what they bond with the Bastet archetype over, that they both on their inner core are playful and fun-loving, and they don't want to take this human experience too seriously. So they love enjoyment, but they're much more transparent, right? The dog, it's always very obvious what the dog is doing. They're transparent, they're straightforward. They will work up the courage to go over and talk to this person who is embodying the Bastet archetype, right? They're inviting them in, and they're the ones who will gain the courage to go over and to investigate that mystery. They also soften for the feminine mystery. They soften for it. They want to explore the feminine mystery in wonder. They want to see it and behold it, and they're in wonder with the feminine mystery. They're in wonder with the Bastet archetype. When they get close to the Bastet archetype, they want to be in the world that opens up for them through that experience of the feminine mystery, through all of that wonder and that fun and that fun-loving and playful. It's funny because in these archetypes, when I started to channel them, I started to also see all of the couples around me and how they would fit into these archetypes. And I saw in this one in particular, my younger brother, as very much an Anubis embodiment, right? He's very much, you know, straightforward, he's fun-loving, he loves to do things with his friends. Even when he was single, he would always be out there having fun, like organizing different things for his group of friends to go do. He always had such a great balance of male and female friends. And he was just friendly. He is just friendly in general. And we think of that, you know, with that dog energy. It's like they're friendly. They're outgoing. Like they want to be in the pack and they want to pursue things. And he always has all of these different pursuits and interests that he's doing and projects that he's working on. And his fiance is such a Bastet archetype. She, like, even for so long, I was like, I can't figure out if she likes me or doesn't like me. And once I understood, like, she just has that feminine mystery where it's like, you have to pursue her. So I actually have to embody my own Anubis archetype when I'm around her in order to start to unlock her internal world. So I guess in a sense, it doesn't even have to be romantic. It just helps you understand how other people can be accessed in a way that feels like such a true embodiment of their own energy and how they desire to be seen and to be heard. And it's so true that sometimes we miss the mark on communication with others because we don't know how to approach them. We're approaching them from an archetype that is just such a wrong, it's like playing the wrong note on a piano, you know, when you're playing a song and then it doesn't turn into a positive interaction with someone else because you've got two totally different archetypes kind of either butting heads, or it's too much feminine energy or too much masculine energy. So it really helped me understand how I can interact with other people around me in a way that truly sees and acknowledges who they are and who their energy is embodying. So for the Bastet and Anubis archetype, the form of communication that I was given for them is that their communication is mostly written or whispered. Isn't that cute? I love that. And I remember really kind of being that way in my very early teens. I would always rather text someone than have to sit down and look them in the eye and have that kind of conversation. But in my brother and his fiance, every time they're around each other, they're always like sharing whispers. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're whispering about. And now I just know that it could be literally nothing. That's just their preferred form of communication. So our next set of archetypes is Hathor, Lady Hathor, who is the snake, right? She is that Kundalini energy. She is the embodiment of feminine sexuality. This is someone who loves love. They love love, they love pleasure, they love joy, they love enjoyment, and it's about the kind of the indulgence of it, right? The indulgence of what they're doing and the savoring of the moment and having every experience be a full body experience. I also kind of imagine them as someone who does tantra, right? Who's into tantra or wants to explore all different aspects of their sexuality, who's very loving. Like when you become a close friend, a confidant, when you become the lover of that person, they are very loving and you can feel that love emanating from them to you. I imagine their hobbies being, you know, like the pole dancing that people are doing nowadays as like exercise, or belly dancing, or as a professional dancer. They've got that kind of like sensuality just pulsating through them at all times. And this tends to be the archetype that has been the most oppressed on this planet because of how embodied they are in their sexuality, in that aspect of the creator, which also happens to be one of the most potent aspects of the creator. Sexual energy is creation energy. It's one of the most pure and potent forms of creation energy on this planet. That's why your Kundalini is in the base of your spine. That's why when you have an orgasm, you feel that energy shooting up your spine. And the Hathor archetype is really the embodiment of that energy. And so the divine complement, the divine masculine complement to Hathor is Seth, right? And I imagine Seth is kind of this tattoo punk rocker, you know, someone who's more moody, who is very deep, very much a Scorpio energy, who is very emotionally available in a deep level and emotionally wants to connect, but they're only going to go there if they are with someone who can handle the depths of that emotion and that energy. And that really is only Hathor because she's so deeply embodied in the feminine mystery and the feminine sexuality. Seth is also someone who just loves everything physical. Right? This is going to be someone who loves working out, who loves tantra, who loves yoga, who probably learns all of those different modalities and just knows them. They're just someone that you're talking to them and they're like, actually, I'm also a trained professional masseuse, but I'm a Wall Street banker at the same time. Right? And so they have their own level of depth. And I would say that Seth is definitely the one who they're so deep that it's almost like they come full circle and they're meeting the feminine mystery in the depths of the unknown. I made a note on here that says, this is the tattoo-loving punk rock couple. And again, it doesn't matter what gender identity or what sexual preference, this could really be any combination. And I love the Hathor set, because I think that they complement the mystery and the depths of the universe so well. So their preferred method of communication is mostly through touch. I love that for them. Touch. So the third archetype is Sekhmet and Ta. Sekhmet is the lioness, right? The lioness, she's the older sister of Bastet as an ascended master. And her energy is definitely that feline energy, but it's almost like Bastet is kind of the maiden version of the feline energy, and Sekhmet is the mother or the heart center, the more mature feminine feline energy. So she's the lioness. If you look at statues of her in ancient Egypt, and I also see her sometimes, she'll come to me not just as the lioness, but she'll come to me also sometimes as the panther, which is the shadow feminine. It's very feline. But what's different about Sekhmet and Bastet is that Bastet is very mysterious, whereas Sekhmet is very direct. She will just say it like it is. She will just say what's on her mind. She will just say what she's thinking, because she's kind of evolved to the place where she knows the effect that she has on other people, and she doesn't allow it to stop her from being herself and from embodying her truth. So she's very direct. She can also be a little bit sarcastic. There's definitely this very direct honesty about her and this truthfulness. It's more of a tough love. And I'm here for it. I'm living for it. I love not just looking at her archetype, but I also love channeling her. And she'll do all of these, like, you know, sensual kind of feline-like hand movements when I'm channeling her, that kind of embodies that panther-esque energy in her. So she's got that tough love. She's connected to body and to movement. Very much connected to the body. This is going to be someone that you find in a yoga class, that you find at the gym, who has developed over the course of their lifetime a very deep connection to the body. They understand, even if it's on a subconscious level, that the body holds a lot of power. So body connection and movement are going to be so important to this archetype. And I would even say that if you feel like you are this archetype and yet you're not as connected to your body and you feel that unhappiness with it, that is definitely this part of your being that wants to come forward and be embodied and be realized. And another thing that sets Sekhmet apart from Bastet is that as the lioness, as the panther, she's now an apex predator. She's no longer the predator that the cat is. She's an apex predator. And so there is something about the Sekhmet that enjoys the hunt. This is not someone that you're going to have to go approach at the bar. They're going to come for you. Like, the second you make that eye contact, like, you can just feel the electricity between someone who has this archetype, and they will make their way over to you because they enjoy the hunt for what they desire. And what's interesting about their complement, Ta, is that Ta, it's almost like they have a little reversal of energy. It's almost like, because she's that apex predator, that this feminine archetype actually has a little bit of the masculine blended perfectly into her. And yet Ta has a little bit of the feminine aspect blended into the masculine, right? So Ta is quiet, introverted, a thinker, maybe even someone who's a little bit nerdy or scientific, someone who is kind of leading with the mind first and the body second, and their Sekhmet complement activates their body and gets them out of their mind. They'll also have very specific areas of interest, very knowledgeable, and that's what Sekhmet likes about that energy, is that she is not afraid to pursue, and Ta has the answers to many of the questions in her heart, in her mind. She can seek out guidance and counsel from Ta. He is unwavering, he is steadfast, he is very loyal through all change. He's kind of that pillar that really grounds her energy, because she is in the hunt and she is more in the body. And so the Ta archetype really grounds her and kind of brings her into the mental state, into the mental world, which we all need sometimes, especially if you are a little bit more connected to the etheric or the supernatural or the unseen. Sometimes you need that grounded Ta person to kind of bring you back down to earth a little bit. And their preferred method of communication is mostly through eye contact and visuals. So this is kind of like when you're with your partner and you can just look at each other and you already know what the other person is thinking, right? Eye contact and visuals. All right, let's jump into our fourth archetype couple. We have the one, the only, She of 10,000 Names, Lady Isis. Isis is the hawk. That is her animal totem, her animal symbol. The hawk. She's also known as the Great Mother energy. Her intentions are transparent. I would say that the Isis archetype has a little bit of that masculine energy, the grounded masculine energy mixed in to her feminine mystery, in that she is transparent, more direct. She will sit down and have a direct conversation with you. She enjoys giving to others. She enjoys nurturing others as that Great Mother energy. She sees the potential in all beings, regardless of where they're at, right? We can all kind of relate to having a mother or a mother figure or some sort of mother archetype in our life who, when we felt very positive with them, it was because we felt like they believed in us. And that can be regardless if they were male or female. It's just someone who sees the potential in you. I think there is something very steadfast and mission and goal oriented about the Isis archetype. And I think that there are so many women on this planet right now who embody the Isis archetype. And I think because she has that embodiment of the direct energy and the mission and goal oriented, I think that it gets a little distorted in our reality as far as women pursuing just their career and kind of ignoring their body, ignoring the feminine mystery, ignoring the deeper parts of themselves, the emotional body and the emotional aspect of ourselves. And they start to lean too much into the masculine. And then they're kind of wondering, like, how come I'm not attracting any of these divine masculine archetypes or divine masculine energy into my life as a partner? And that's because their polarity is a little imbalanced if there's too much of that mission or goal oriented. And so balancing out with spiritual practices, with energy practices, with the body, whether that's going to the gym or working out or taking different kinds of classes that move the body in new ways. Because out of all of these, I would say that Isis is the one where the body comes less naturally for her until she has found her path and her way back to the body. And if you know the story of Isis and Osiris, like, she had to do all the work. And I think that that's why this archetype is the way that they are. And, you know, when her, in the ancient Egyptian myth, when her partner Osiris was cut up into 14 pieces, she had to go find all of the pieces and then put him back together with her feminine magic. And I really see that as kind of the steps that she goes through, or the phases she goes through in her life, as in she may be a career woman for a while or a career person for a while, and then decide that she wants to pursue her own thing, she wants to create her own thing, and then she wants to embrace her magic, learn her magic, come back into divine union with her magic. And when they're at that point, this is definitely the person that has tried all of the different spiritual practices, all of the different spiritual things. Like, they've done the Reiki, and they've done the yoga, and they've done the Taoism and the Buddhism and all of the different mysteries and the witchcraft and everything. They've tried it all because she's in that moment of reconnecting with her magic in order to experience the life that she desires. And after Isis, you know, revives her husband Osiris, then she kind of goes back into the divine union. But as the hawk, right? The hawk, again, is another apex predator of the sky. There's a self-efficiency about the Isis archetype that's very useful when you are on your own or when you're in a very masculine energy world like we are today. And I also want to say that I think the other archetypes, like the Bastets and the Sekhmets and the Hathors, have all kind of gone through their own struggle with constantly being compared to the Isis archetype and constantly feeling like, that's the modern woman, that's how I should be, but I don't want to be that because that's not who I truly am. I'm much more of the feminine mystery. I'm much more of the sensuality and the sexuality. I'm much more of the inside of my body, and I am the predator. The snake and the lioness and the cat are not a hawk. And when we try to force ourselves to be an archetype that we are not, that's when, in my own life and what I've seen in other people's lives, is that's when I see the struggle, right? The feeling of, I don't know who I am or where I fit, and I don't know how to really engage with my partner in a way that feels fulfilling for both of us, because I'm trying to be someone that I'm not, or they're looking for someone that I'm not. And personally, as an Isis archetype, I will definitely say that balancing the masculine energy and working through the feelings of, how come I'm not more like a Hathor? How come I'm not more like a Bastet? How come I'm not more sensual and mysterious and like giggling and whispering in the corner? Understanding these archetypes just allowed me to kind of like let it go and be like, that's just not who I am. But I can also celebrate and recognize and see the others in my life who are those archetypes, and I can honor them while confidently embodying the one that I know that I am. So I learned a lot from this. I learned a lot from my beloved Isis. So the masculine counterpart, complement for Isis, is Osiris. And Osiris is the hunter, the provider. This is someone that can take time to trust other people, someone who can live alone and be very autonomous, right? They're a hunter. So this is the guy who lives out in the woods of Colorado, the mountains of Colorado, and they're very self-sufficient. And so kind of in their own way, they have to make a journey in order to come to union together and to see how they fit and how they work together. And that is when she finds her magic, and that is when Osiris comes to his Achilles heel, which is, you know, in the story, getting cut up into 14 pieces and not winning the battle, right? The hunter, this is someone who's got a lot of that very typical masculine energy. They're a hunter, they're a provider. It takes them time to open up. It takes them time to trust other people. They can live alone or autonomous. They can kind of have some of those hermit aspects to themselves. But what's interesting about Osiris is that they have all of these embodiments of different masculine aspects, and they become a mentor for others in their community, right? Because they have tried, just like Isis, they have tried many different spiritual practices. They have been on their own journey. They have these different experiences. And Osiris creates their own formula that works best for them. Out of all of the spiritual yahoo out there, they try it all and they create their own formula that works for them. And for them, that is like their magic elixir. And they bond with their Isis archetype when those two have gone on their journey and they have found that leaning into vulnerability for both of them in their own unique ways is what brings them together. They bond over the fact that they are both very, very dedicated to their missions. They are both goal-oriented. Once they know what their mission is, they are pursuing it together with kind of this single-minded focus. So their preferred method of communication is mostly telepathic. Telepathic communication. And now we have our fifth and final archetype couple, Mayet and Thoth. I am obsessed with Mayet, and it's taken me a little while to get used to that pronunciation of her name, because for as long as I have known of her in the Egyptian canon, I have always said Mayat, and apparently it's pronounced Mayet, and I don't think that she minds either way. I absolutely adore channeling her, very, very briefly channeling her, and realizing that these archetypes have kind of moved up through the different energy centers, right? We start with more of the maiden with the Bastet energy, and that's in the sacral center, and then we kind of move up through the heart centers. We have Isis in that heart center as that great mother energy that she grows into throughout her lifetime. And then we have Mayet, who I realized in this channeling was that representation of the third eye. This is someone with spiritual mastery. Mayet's symbol is the feather of truth. She sees the truth. She has discernment. She has wisdom. She is steadfast, almost like this fairy godmother energy, the friend who kind of shows up when you need them and they have the great advice and they have all of the great wisdom. And you're like, how do you know all of that? And yet they're so kind of self-assured, and it doesn't matter what age they are embodied in kind of this old soul wisdom. What I also find with Mayet is that they are immediately drawn in their lifetime to specific spiritual practices that they have already mastered in previous lifetimes when they have been, you know, maybe the Isis who was trying all of the different things and figuring out what they liked to do. They already know what they want to do in this lifetime, and they are immediately drawn back to those practices, and they have this etheric level of mastery that just seems to come through. It's almost like, hey, you didn't have to try. All the rest of us are trying, and you're just like naturally good at it, right? And they have that seer quality. They can kind of see the future a little bit. And they almost give you their guidance and their advice based on what they are connecting to in the future. The outcome. It's like a clear knowing. So kind of seeing the bigger picture, and that is the wisdom, right? That is the experience that we gain over many, many lifetimes. So I think if you meet a Mayet in your life, or maybe you identify as a Mayet energy, that's a very old soul. That's someone who, right when you meet them, you're like, you could be 20 years old, but it feels like you have the wisdom of an 85-year-old, you know? And they're very much, just like their spiritual practices, they're very much drawn to exactly what they like. They know exactly what they like, and you're not going to talk them out of it. They have a confidence that has built up through all of those lifetimes. And of course, their divine counterpart, their divine complement is Thoth. Thoth is the ibis, which is a type of bird, and Thoth is the wisdom keeper, right? The great magician, very wise, very learned, someone who is very knowledgeable, kind of has the mage energy about them. Whatever they're doing, it's usually something scientific or spiritual, and they just go all in. Like, they know the most about whatever topic it is that they have chosen to pursue with their life. You're going to find a Thoth as, like, a university professor, as a scientist, as someone in physics, all of those disciplines that require you to be very knowledgeable. The great magician, maybe even as doctors. They see the larger plan the same way that Mayette does, right? And so they have that masculine knowledge, the embodiment of the masculine knowledge. And they understand that knowledge is a key piece of the spiritual journey. It is not the embodiment, but it is the clear knowing. And they've mastered that. They've probably also mastered multiple different spiritual practices to the point where they are then able to innovate their own spiritual practice. I definitely think that the man who channeled the Gene Keys, I think it's Richard Rudd, and then Ra Uruhu, the man who channeled the human design system, those are Thoth archetypes, right? And so they're very much like, they've done it for so many lifetimes that they just come through and they channel the process that they invented like three lifetimes ago. And it's about wisdom, right? They're the wisdom keeper. They really are the wisdom of the fifth density of consciousness and that throat chakra. Even someone like Albert Einstein was definitely a Thoth archetype. And so they can get a little bit, you know, singular and a little bit quirky in their single pursuit of what they want to bring into this world. And it's not like they are discovering it. It's like they are rediscovering it to bring it into this world, to gift it to humanity. And that's going to be someone who's very confident in who they are, who is not going to shapeshift, who's not going to people please, who's not going to go through any of the insecurities. And that's why Mayette is their perfect balance, because she's also not going to shapeshift, not going to change what she likes, not going to people please. There's this straightforward aspect of her and of them together as this divine cosmic lover couple. So their communication is on all levels. That's what they told me, all levels. So it could be touch, it could be telepathic, it could be eye contact, written or whispered, it could be any of them. Their communication is on all levels. They've worked through those insecurities about multiple forms of communication, which really is the bridge to your partner in many different lifetimes. And so they have this level of confidence between them. But I would also say that this is probably the couple where they have the highest likelihood of never needing a partner in their lifetime, because they have found such a deep balance of the feminine mystery and the masculine knowledge within themselves that I wouldn't be surprised at all if you meet one of these archetypes and they never married or they never coupled with anyone, they never had a longtime partner, they feel very comfortable on their own, because they already know what their purpose and what their mission is, and they understand that it's not something that you do, it is who you are being. Well, I would love to hear from the listeners who connect with me on Instagram at I Am The Wellspring. I'd love to hear what you thought of these archetypes. I'd love to hear if there was one that you identified with, or maybe you thought it was all total bullshit, whatever. Your feelings are totally valid. Personally, I loved learning about them and I was really excited to share them with you. I hope that it opens you up to a greater clarity about who you are and gives you some of the confidence to just own exactly who you are, exactly who you want to be, and allow that to naturally magnetize your cosmic lover. That's going to be the perfect fit for who you are and who you truly want to be. Thank you so much for listening, beautiful souls. I hope that you will share this episode with a friend, someone who might also enjoy it and get some clarity in their own lives. And as always, I will see you on the next one.